the manas is primarily that of the woman, etc. Similar when it comes to inheritance, we learned last year in Lanksubis, on the contrary, the halacha takes very good care of the Jewish woman. She should have enough to take care of her needs, even if it means that her brothers have to go and knock on the doors to raise funds to eat. Habonas yizonav, habonam yishalal apsachim, we learned in the Mishnah. So then what's it all about? So in my opinion, these four can be linked under one heading, which is the fact that a woman is excluded from a public role called Kvuda Bas Melech Pnim, which we discussed once before in one of our Thursday shiurim. All these four relate to that. Obviously, they have to eat. Habonas yizonav, habonam yishalal apsachim, we learned in the Mishnah. So then what's it all about? So in my opinion, these four can be linked under one heading, which is the fact that a woman is excluded from a public role called Kvuda Bas Melech Pnim, which we discussed once before in one of our Thursday shiurim. All these four relate to that. Obviously the minyan relates to that. Minyan is a public idea. Srara, authority by definition, have to be public. And inheritance, it seems to me, is not just for the needs. The needs of the women are taken care of better than the men. It's for the big bucks that involve the public role which is needed to maintain these funds and to invest these funds and to go out to the outside world and to be involved in commerce and agriculture and industry and trade that the Torah was not that excited about. And testimony requires mandatory attendance. You cannot say I don't want to come. If you're summoned to bed, you must come. And if you're not, and if you can, if any person who can say I don't want to come is disqualified completely. A melech is the best example. A melech who cannot be summoned to court because it would be the shalom fi chavodo. He can't even volunteer to come to court. That's the first of the Posk. All these four is what I've sometimes termed, and we'll come to back to the term a little bit later, divine sociology, which of course in the outside world is kind of steer in terms. Sociology is the study of human behavior, and divine is Makadosh Baruch. Well, the same thing. I give two examples. You know, there's Eretz Yisrael and China. Huh? I know the present government, but until now, anyone who gave birth to a child in Eretz Yisrael, as soon as you give birth, the government comes with an agent with a check, gives you a model type of a check. A check. Why a check? Because the government is encouraging Jewish children to be born in Eretz Yisrael. A check. That was their policy. If you have a baby, there's a check from the government because we went into the check, obviously not $1 million. It's a symbolic that the government wants there should be more Jewish children. Do we want to have Jews in the world? We want to have Eretz Yisrael to be populated with Jews. We're in a competition with other types who are in the Eretz. We want more Jews. That's an Eretz Yisrael. In China, if you have more than one child, you're taxed, I think, 95% of your money, something like that. For this reason, the families are small. Now, the Israeli government didn't say you must have children, nor did the Chinese government say you're not allowed to have children. But the incentives and disincentives are there. Laniya's died there, this is a mashal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in infinite wisdom, and as it was developed by Chazal, and they added and subtracted, and it made some of it a little bit different, was also in the same idea. Torah never said a woman can't be a businesswoman. She can go out there and be a multimillionaire running around the world. Torah never said that. Never said it. Never said a woman can't be in a public position in terms of, you know, she's out in the streets and all that. No. But the Torah, the way the system was arranged, there was an incentive for the women to somehow be able to stay out of this particular public role. Now, some she may not do, and some may, because of all that, it's an incentive for her to fulfill the panima in a better way. It's a disincentive from seeking the public posture. That's my understanding of this, what I call fourth category. So to repeat, of the physiological distinctions in terms of mitzvahs, primarily Zman Gram and Talmud Torah, this is the marital law, and a distinction in the public versus private. And now, my punchline is, Baniyas Daiti, that all of these four categories, and I believe if you think of any distinction you want, it will fit into one of these four categories. Well, it may take a little bit of doing, but I think it all fits in. Nias Daiti, the one overriding rule which governs and which can explain all of these four categories and all these specifics which fit into the categories is a very simple, basic fact. And it's a fact which no amount of feminism is able to change. And that simple fact is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his infinite wisdom, and of course one good question is still, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it this way? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his infinite wisdom, determined that only one half of the members of the human race will be able to bear children. Kach goes our Ritzonah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made it, everyone could have a child. Why not? Hayad Hashem Tiktar. He decided, no, that half the people should be male and not be childbearing, half should be female and childbearing. It seems to me, and I'll try to explain to you briefly, how everything fits into this mold. Of course, the physiological stuff is obvious. The Milchus Nida, Tai, the Bris Mila, I mean, that's clear. But let's go a little bit further. From Moshe has in his tshuva, the same tshuva to Rabbi Kelemer, that a woman who bears children is most suited to raise those children. He brings a proof from the animal kingdom. In the animal kingdom, you find that they have all absentee fathers. They're not around. The mothers who care for the young. Why? It's built into the teva, even of the general community beyond the human community, even the animal community, that there's such a thing that the woman gives birth to the child, that's built into the teva. You can question that too, but it's a fact that that's the way it is. And as a result, since the women are better suited to train and bring up their children to whom they gave birth, the Torah does not want to impose obligations upon a woman which could take her away from this very significant obligation which is incumbent upon her. Rav Moshe writes that he feels that the obligation to study Torah, which as we know is a full Torah obligation, I don't mean an obligation to know the basics of Yiddishkeit, nor to know all the halachas, but it's really the truth of the matter, because even that's pretty daunting. So, I mean, the Yom HaVelayla, to know everything, Kol HaTorah Kula, that would stand in the way. And Zman Grom HaMitzvahs, all of a sudden, start everything. Gotta say Krishna, gotta this, gotta, I mean, the kids are screaming, they're yelling, no, gotta go down, gotta say Krishna. What's the matter? The whole house will fall apart. So therefore, the Torah wished it, said Rav Moshe, that women should be exempt from these mitzvahs. Now, if they're able to do the mitzvahs and juggle everything else on the side, I said we can't, you know, like I said before, divine sociology. The woman wants to have a public role in whatever she does, or she wants to build a businesswoman making $1 million. We can't. The Torah doesn't stop these things formally, but the way the halachas are formulated is to enable her to take care of this very important position of child rearing after child bearing without having the extra burdens which might take her away. That's number two. Number three, precisely because the woman is the childbearing partner in a marriage, it's critical that she have only one husband. Just imagine, a woman has two husbands, and she becomes pregnant. I mean, you know, not very pretty. I mean, it was DNA, no DNA, whatever they have, these blood tests. I mean, you can't have a woman who should share two husbands at the same time. It just can't be. And as a result of that, the nature of marriage is that a woman enters into the home of her husband. There could be two women by Torah law entering into the home of a particular husband. You know that the husband enters into the home of his wife, but if he has two wives, then which home did he enter? He has to be basically in one place. And for this reason, that the Kiddushin is that the woman marries the husband, and Nisuin is that the woman is the base Isha. Nadar, we discussed last year at great length what's the nation of Chuppah Nisuin, and the woman enters into the home of her husband. As a result, the husband is the active partner giving the ring, and if Nebuch doesn't work out, it's the husband who has to take the active role in saying to the lady, listen, it's very nice knowing you, but I mean, not so nice, But v'shilcha mibeiso. Not to send her from his house. I mean, she may not be the same. She may not be in the house. He may not be on the street. But according to the halacha, he yells v'shilcha mibeiso. I'm kicking you out of my house. I'm taking away in chains. And she's in there in his luxury apartment. I'm kicking you out of my house. V'shilcha mibeiso. That's how the Torah describes what a gerushin is. Etc. The rest you just figure out on your own. Finally, it seems to me to be the distinction between public and private as well. The halacha felt that a woman who is has this charge with this incredibly important responsibility, not only child bearing but also child rearing, which go together, as Rav Moshe writes, should be given a proper opportunity to do so. And the proper place to raise children is in privacy. A person running out all over the world, running out into the streets, has less ability to raise children. We see today in today's world, women are out in the street today and working, etc., etc. They often they postpone the marriage because after all they are busy with their careers. And if they are married, they'll postpone having children because, you know, the fast track. You have a child, it sets you back. Right? And if they have a child and they run out because they have to get back to, you know, after their 6-week leave or whatever it may be, we're right back in there to show that they know the same strength as well. So often the children are left with a less than perfect upbringing. Less than they could have gotten from their mother. So again, those women who are super achievers and super women who can juggle everything, tabal and bracha. But not everybody can expect them to do that. So therefore, the halacha points in a certain direction. Now, then you may say, so I told you, the halacha discriminates against women. They say, I didn't make things better, I made things worse. I showed there are four categories. One reason, so you see the Torah discriminated against those who bear children, against the women, and then it puts them down as second-class citizens. So in my opinion, the answer to that is the Gemara Masechta Brachos. The Gemara Masechta Brachos in Daf Yud-Zayin says two things, one after the other. They're both very important. Two things. The Gemara says something which gives an indication of how we react to the Jewish woman. Is she in fact a second-class citizen? So I'd like to give again a mashal from the corporate world. Oh, corporate world. You know, some companies now, it's hard to tell who's on top. Because it's, you see, president. No. As a president, as a chairman of the board, chief executive officer, chief commander, there's so many different, the shyness, it's hard sometimes to know. It could be something just figurative, it's a position which means nothing. Right? President of Israel. It doesn't mean anything. So there's one way to indicate, among others, but there's one significant way to indicate who's on top. And that is, who gets paid the most. You know, with money, with benefits, with all the various perks, who's getting the biggest salary? That often, usually indicates who's really on top. We have the title. So I want to know on both sides. Who gets paid more? The men or the women? If men get paid more, it indicates men are in fact superior. Women are second-class citizens. If women get paid more, then maybe it indicates the reverse. Says the Gemara in Masechta Brachos, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Gedola Avtocha Shevticha HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeNoshim Yosem En HaAnoshim. Quotes the pasuk. Women are paid, not in dollars, in currency it's worth much more than dollars, believe it or not, even more than the yen and the franc and the mark put together. It's mitzvah points, Olam Haba points, Avtocha HaKadosh Baruch Hu points. And they get more. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to launch a class action suit. Why should we get paid more than men? Equal. Equality. Democracy. Abolition of slavery. But what's this over here? That women being paid more than men? She paid equally to men. Lania's dainty. Again, this is my own suggestion. Enachinam. Don't worry. Have no fear, my dear men. You can be paid the same exact thing as a woman. Ivan says with Ferish Vakaret, would it be paid more? I think no. The reason is perhaps as follows. We learn the Chazal in many, many places that if a person receives a certain reward in Olam Hazeh, so it detracts a little bit from his Olam Haba, and vice versa. Well, in the world in which we live, unfortunately, and that's just the way it is, human beings have human frailties and weaknesses, and they are given to measure things from a public perspective. Oh, he's chashev because he's the president, or he's this, or that. So then another, a second individual who's doing just as good a job, maybe even a better job, but doing it in a private way, does not get the same recognition, and the same adulation and the same, let me use the word, kavod, right? The same honor. Kavod ha-meduma, we call it. Imaginary respect, which the more public persona receives. Seems to me that's a shot over here too. Because of the men's more public role, they receive it, so, ooh, ooh, ooh. Whereas the woman, she can do just as good a job, a better job, and someone doesn't get the same, quote, covered in this world. And therefore, for the exact same level of competence and of righteousness that they both demonstrate, the woman is being, quote, unquote, paid less in this world. That's why she gets paid more than the other world, to make up for that little difference. That's how I understand it. It's really the same thing, just with a little bit of a compensation. But you want to know, so why? What does a woman do, in fact, to deserve the same exact level of schar as a man? The next Gemara. Nashe b'may zachya. And the next line. Bakui b'nai levei knishta, u'basnuya gavraya v'rabonon, v'natasnu gavraya adasa v'rabonon. Because they are what they call today, and it's called a dirty word, enablers. I mean, they help their children study in the yeshiva, and they help their husbands study Torah. And they do this with love and with dedication. And for this reason, we said before, this role, the critical role, which Rav Moshe spoke about, raising children properly, and this, of course, relates to being a proper wife, this is what gets them that schar, which is just the same as the schar the man can get by sitting and breaking his head over the Gemara, and doing other mitzvahs of Masa Tovah, which a woman does in a different way. And you know, at least I'll end with this, because that's my notes from I happen to catch up my drasha from Shabbos HaGadol, what is it now? Almost 14 years ago, we talk about the Noshim Tzidkanios. B'schar Noshim Tzidkanios Nigla Avosanim Mitzrayim. You see, Gevaldik, that a woman is going to be those who are going to bring us to Geula. They brought the first Geula to be the next. Great! So what are they going to do to bring the Geula? Talis, Tefillin, Kriyas HaTorah. What are they going to do? Well, what are they doing in Mitzrayim to bring the Geula? We know what they did. The same Gemara tells us what they did once Masech Masalta. What did they do? What they did was they saw to it that there would be a continuity to the Jewish family. When the husbands came back, Rashi quotes in the Chumash, husbands came back from the fields and they were tired. They didn't want to have any children because after all, what's the point of having children? In Mitzrayim, they're going to be persecuted. They said, no, it's the future of Am Yisrael. It's continuity. And we're going to be the ones, and even taking initiative, which we otherwise might be a little bit inappropriate in terms of raising of the family. They did it, and they took care of it, and they were dedicated to a Moser Nefesh Mamish for the fulfillment of this role. The role of childbearing, which was given to them by divine destiny, and the role of childrearing, which was they're most suited to, and which is a tremendously important and indispensable role in Jewish life. And because of that, they brought it to Geula. So therefore, it seems to me that that's the way. And it's not that we view women as second-class citizens. It's the other way around. They even get a little bit of a higher, all right, that we'll call them equal. Democracy, equal, equality. But equality is not identity. But because if they're equal, they're identical, with exactly the same roles to fulfill, then we should be able to have children also. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't make men and women the same way. He made them different. And he has part of his divine wisdom. You want to question his divine wisdom already? Then you're certainly a kaifer. We believe that God is smart, not just that he's just. And he decided to make the world this way, that's the way it has to be. And it's not for us to undermine it, to try to make snide remarks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. It took me a long time to say what I had to say. I'm not even finished yet. But I felt it was important. A number of people asked me to speak about this, and I have what to say. You heard me out. If you have any questions, I'll be happy after Mincha to talk to you about it or tomorrow morning. And if... Last week we spoke about the Indian Jewish womanhood. And among the things that we discussed was the fact that when a woman marries, I know that. I'll get to that soon. When a woman marries, it's a woman enters into the home of her husband, as it says in the Torah, HaKadosha, in Beit Isha Nadara, or as we read in the Vim. You find that that's how the halacha views marriage. Now, marriage does not mean that a man buys a woman. That's chattel, to use a term that we recently struck from the Mechiras Chametz poems, the old poems, had it, I think I took it out now. I once told you a story that I was traveling in a bus many years ago from Yerushalayim to Karen B'Yavne, and that it was there for Pesach, it was a Kiddushin. And I was a matzman in those years, so I used to learn on the bus. Now I can't learn when learn. For those years, I was still able to learn on the bus, and I was sitting in a bus, minding my own business, and we're learning the first paragraph of Kiddushin. And I'm on the bus, and a young lady sits next to me. After a few minutes, she says to me, Slicha, Shal Shal Shela? So she said to me like this, Mazot Meret Aisha Niknet. You see at the top of every page it says, Aisha Niknet, Paragrisha Kiddushin. Mazot Meret Aisha Niknet. So here was, I was on the spot already. I thought she was asking me questions, when do you get off at this way? I had all of a sudden, she asked me a loaded question. I don't, she was a single girl. I didn't pay too much attention. The question still sticks in my mind many years later. So I explained to her that it doesn't mean that the man acquires a woman in a financial sense, that he acquires a book or any other item. What it means is they go into, enter into a formal ceremony which has certain resemblances to other types of kinyanim which are called acquisition. As I've often quipped that I'm glad she didn't see what the other Mishnah said. You know, there's a progression. Aisha nikne, Eved Ivri nikne, Eved Knani nikne, and then Behe Megasa nikne. So I'm glad that she didn't, she saw the top, I mean, as bad as the top page, the headline was, it wasn't, it could have been worse. But seriously speaking, it does mean that although Chalila, we don't say it's acquiring property, but at the same time, the Maisa Kiddushin does approximate to some extent Indian of a Kenyan, which is relates to the Indian of a woman, quote, entering into the home of her husband, which although that stage only happens during the Nisuin, which we spoke about last year by Richas. But even the Kiddushin itself it means that now is Isha's is the Kudeshis, the Uresis, to the husband. And yes, it's true that the husband is Ma'aris and the Kadesh, the woman, but you don't say that it's not, the Rana Nadarim, the Kedushin was famous Rana Mesef Nadarim, that the woman's role in the Kedushin process is not the same as ordinarily a Machna would be. She's quote unquote being Machna herself. Really, the Machna is the most active member. We discussed in the Chiras Chometz. The Machna does everything, the Kohen does nothing. But here, when it comes to Kedushin, it's unique. Around the phrase, the expression, anyway, that's not. What I'm trying to say over here is that there's a reason why the Torah phrases it in such a way. And in my opinion, the custom, which exists even in the non-Jewish world for many years, that when a woman marries, she assumes the name of her husband, there's a reason behind it. And I think the reason is more or less related to this idea. She, her name is Ms. Cohen, and she married Levy. So it's Mrs. Cohen Levy. She used to be called Mrs. Levy Plain. Now you want to call her Mrs. Cohen Levy. It's not so much such a terrible thing. She wants to maintain her identification as people should know who she was. And they wonder who's Mrs. Levy. The Mrs. Cohen Levy. Who's Mrs. Klein? You know, the Mrs. Schwartz Klein. Whatever. But as long as without a dash, I can make a case for it. That means that she uses like a middle name. So she has a maiden name as a middle name. So then I can see it. Frankly, I don't like it. Even that, because it's always traditional that the woman usually drops her maiden name. And it's much better that way. That's what I think. But if she has the maiden name as a middle name, What happens to dash, what the dash really means is that no, she maintains her identity completely. She doesn't really want to go into his house. But, you know, it's a legalism, so they'll put in a dash. And as Reuven said correctly, very often accompanying this, not necessarily, very often accompanying this phenomenon is the other half of the coin, that the husband takes on also with a dash. Because after all, I mean, otherwise it's a chutzpah. Otherwise it's a girl chutzpah. She writes a dash and he leaves only his name. It's a chutzpah. So he has to also take on the dash. That's right. A new word. I have a cousin, and his name is Weiss. I have a lot of cousins by that name. And one particular cousin who married a young lady, and her name is Gold. Right? So I'm told that their child was by the name Weiss Gold. That they made a, yeah, but I don't think that's exactly what the Torah had in mind. Anyway, so already the name to me is already a turn off, because even names, there's things mean things. You can't say, what's in a name? What is drag a company? Who cares the name is? What do you care they call the mother's name and the birthday? What do you care? Of course I care, because these names are symbolic, and symbolism is very important. It reflects a world view, how you look at things. And I think I think the name is already no good. But that was last week. This week, part of this general discussion, is the question is now the time for Orthodox women rabbis? The answer is no. But the question is, why not? It's a serious question. It deserves a very serious discussion. But I don't want to spend a whole shiur, I just can't, I don't have time to spend a whole, but just a little bit. It begins by a discussion of a woman speaking at a levaya. Now, a woman speaking at a levaya, to my mind, it depends on the circumstances. I think sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's inappropriate. It depends really on the circle in which a person is traveling, which the people who are gathered. I mean, any levaya is a different circle. The Rov Minyan, where are they coming from? If they're coming from a circle where it's unheard of that a woman speaks in public and any other event, I think it's completely inappropriate that a woman should get up and speak in public at a levaya. And I think it would be viewed as inappropriate. Go to, just for lack of a better term, the Borough Park, where women are, how should I say, to be seen and not heard. I know what I said. So then it would be completely inappropriate for a woman to go to a levaya and be called upon to speak. It wouldn't be right, because that's their way of doing things is different. That's why some of the circles of Borough Park would be inappropriate to have a wedding with mixed seating would be inappropriate in some places in Borough Park, because they're not used to that. The society there has evolved. For whatever reason, good or bad, I would say should not anyone make fun of those who are more stringent than you in these matters, because after all, the world in which we live, so whatever siyogim are being erected, are being built around the basic tzniyos, which is mandatory, ought to be looked upon favorably, even though by those who don't do it, for those who consider it to be beyond what's required, and therefore sometimes even ridiculous, preposterous. Don't make fun. There's a reason for all these things, even if you yourself don't observe it. So it would be inappropriate to have a mixed seating in the place where they always have separate seating. That's exactly why some forum is quoted. Goes back to the same seating yet. If they have a custom of kala, and we discussed it last year, people sitting together, so you can't just have simcha lemono, because the simcha is not shochein where the ruhi aveir. So the later post of Pentecost, from the Levush and others, that's not true in his day, because in his day, already the women and men were sitting together more frequently. So it was not, every circumstance is different. You can't just lump everything together. So, not only can it change, it obviously has changed the circumstances. 100% changed the circumstances. If you take a person who's never sat with women in his life, all the time he's just sitting only with men, and all of a sudden, you put him at a wedding and there's a woman next to him here and another one over there, I mean, unless the guy's ecstatic at all of it, it's bound to maybe somewhat look a little bit different than it looked in the last 10 years that he's aware. So, with the person is more used to it, it's a different story. Now, I want to, don't misinterpret me. You get used to a lot of things. So they say, let's have all the schools should be co-ed, because after all, you get used to it. Then what exactly are you getting used to, I always ask. What are you getting used to? Yeah, well, anyway, you understand what I'm trying to say, I hope. It also depends upon, you know, family considerations. Someone's a Leviathan, and the daughter of the deceased, or the Nifta, or Nifteres wants to speak. Very difficult to tell a daughter, no, you may not. It may end up maybe in a certain circumstance, but the daughter realizes on her own, it's impossible. Either with a Leviathan or a Hespit. I was once involved not long ago. It was a Hespit, it was, I think, a Shloshim Hespit. There was a dispute within the Mishpacha whether a woman, the daughter of the deceased, should speak on that. The daughter said yes, and another of the family said no. And it came to me. What do I say? I say, well, we should make shalom. It shouldn't be something to break a family up over. It's just that the daughter insists on speaking. So let her speak already. Even if you feel that it's not so appropriate, but the people around in that society, they think it is appropriate. So, no, what are you going to do about it? You know, you think it's just not so... That's A. So again, I have nothing against this with the circumstances permitted. B, talk about a young boy looking at the rabbi during Yom Kippur Drush, and he sees how his eyes are fixed on the rabbi, and he relates to him not only as a scholar and a leader, but as a role model and future mentor. Okay? He wants to know, today there are no Orthodox women rabbis to serve as role models. You know, I don't understand. There are a lot of role models in this world. Why must a role model go with the title rabbi? I just don't understand. There are many rabbis who are absolute failures as role models. But they have nobody who follows them. No one who relates to them. They go with the title rabbi. I mean, is the title rabbi an automatic guarantee of success? And the absence of the title rabbi a guarantee of failure? So to be a role model? There are many role models for women who are women, were very successful educators. Take the classroom. It's only in the synagogue that the students' his eyes are fixed on the rabbi, but the rabbi is coming from on high and standing at a big pulpit. What if the teacher, be it male or female, is sitting at a desk and relating to the students? I would hope that everyone's eyes that I'm speaking are fixed on me too. Not closed, you know, when the guy's had a rough night last night. But the Talmidim is also to fix their eyes on what the Rebbe says also. And the same way the eyes will be fixed on the Rebbe when he's speaking.
That's the Lashon.
Eyes fixed on the Rabbi. So his lips are parted, and every few seconds he faintly shakes them to complete the familiar Hebrew phrase the Rabbi has to be God. Every Shia is supposed to be that way. And the same way it's supposed to be that way every Shia by a male Rebbe, it should be that way every Shia by a female Mora. Let me use that expression. What's wrong with the expression Mora? The wonderful thing, I can tell you a specific circumstance of wonderfully talented, highly educated women, sometimes daughters of the rabbis, and they have that in them, sometimes not, who fill this role admirably and very successfully of being a role model to their students. No matter how bright their students, they have 1,500 in the SATs. I mean, you know, I'm not against having women who are bright being either students or teachers in the enterprise of Jewish education. Fine, terrific. And they can be role models too. Why must they have to have the words, the title, rabbi? Yes, it's true. No equivalent status of leadership is conferred upon Orthodox women. That's exactly the point. Yeah. The primary problem in my mind about women rabbis, as I mentioned a little bit last week, is the problem of Sarara. That the Rambam says that there should be, Sarara should be limited to male, and Rav Moshe discusses this Rambam, but agrees with the Rambam, does not agree with the Rambam, but we believe that the Rambam said so, and we should try to adhere to it as much as we can. What about them? Right, we discussed Devorah. Did we mention it last week, Devorah? Maybe we didn't mention it. Devorah. How could Devorah be a shofetet? So, Tosfos the Kasha, they discuss it in some length. There's a whole simple about it. Of course, the one inversion, she didn't have the formal title. She just told them what the answers were. You know, they had this man, and he pronounced it, banged down court in session. Court adjourned. And but he didn't know anything. I mean, he didn't know that much. So she would give him the answers. Others have an exception of the Azibra, others say different, whatever different answers they give. But whatever the answers are, what it really means is that there's nothing against a woman scholar. Right? A woman who knows a lot, fine, wonderful. Wonderful. You know, not with the same what we spoke about last week, what I feel is ideal for the majority of the women in terms of the curriculum, etc. But if there's a woman who's very scholarly and who knows a lot, great. But in terms of the position of authority, it's something which the Rambam must cement. For example, Rabbi Shmuel HaMashgiach. Don't be a Mashgiach. I don't mean Mashgiach Ruchani like we have over here. Mashgiach Kashmi. We should have meet his kosher. So Rabbi Moshe has over there that he thinks that a woman could be a Mashgiach, but she shouldn't be the Rabbi Machshir. Because the Rabbi Machshir is a position of authority. Well, it depends. If the Rabbi Machshir is in Nevada Rabbanim somewhere, then I think it is a measure of authority. Because there, if you have a Nevada Rabbanim in many communities, you exercise a measure of, forgive me the word, but I'm sorry, power. I mean, in the sense that, you know, you want this, he should get Ashkenaz, he shouldn't get Ashkenaz, I'm extremist with dollars and cents, and all kinds of things of this nature. But if you are giving a quote-unquote a private Ashkenaz, then the other way around, they come to you. Will you please give me Ashkenaz? And I say yes or no, I only have the same level of Thorah. Yes?
What about Tumsi on the Malka? Did they get it a brother when she came and checked out? Did
right.
know that they were done when she was there?
Right. That's a good question. Could be that the feeling in that situation, again, you have to look in the sources. Could be that the feeling at that time was that the alternative would be a complete disaster. So even though it would be a choice which would otherwise be inappropriate, but given the, if you know it's a little bit about the time, a little bit of the personality were, could be the alternative would have been many, many times worse. So therefore, I think that was Rabbi Soloveitchik was once asked, well, how could the Mizrahi at the time be part of the government which has gold in their ears? Prime Minister of Israel, don't you know that you're not allowed to have a woman Prime Minister? So the Rebbe alleged to have smiled and said, of course, you can't have a Prime Minister who's Michal Shabbos, who's surveillance. And what he was trying to say was,
you know
I mean, you
time
know, time. The other people before may have been male, but they were, that's about it, you know? So it's a hard decision to make if you could have a male Russia and a woman today, as you say. Who we better have to have as the leader? Of course, you can carry that too far. Okay, so then let the best man or woman win. And the president of the shul could also be the woman, because she's more qualified by one iota than the man who she beat with 51-49 election. No, I don't think that's true. It's only the Malcolm Shem. Hey, now Nashim, Ishtali Liot Isha. In the sense that you have to be have that kind of a leadership. That's how I understand it. But again, look at the sources. I don't know. All right, anyway, so for this reason, I believe that's my biggest problem. And therefore, I don't feel anything wrong if a woman studies Torah, I mentioned last time, and if the woman, in order to demonstrate her knowledge of Torah, wants a piece of paper, I don't understand. All girl seminaries give out, a paper that this woman, the master of Tanakh and principles of education, and so why can't you give a piece of paper? No one says boo. The paper that said a woman is a master. I don't know. A woman wants to ask her lady about Tarat HaMishpacha. The lady going around now, a very fine woman who teaches Tarat HaMishpacha to women. And she has letters from the Gedolei Ode Hador, from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I think maybe Rebbe Yosef, I'm not sure about that, who encourage her in her work, and basically what they're saying is that she's an expert in the field. So it exists. So if she would come to me, say, can you write me a letter of expert in the field? I said, well, let me give you a fair. I wouldn't sign it, I don't know, it's based on someone else's signature. And they ask her all the questions I want to ask, and she comes out, and she, why not? Why wouldn't I count on her letter? So we're not embarrassed to admit that the women who know who know Torah, who know Halacha, either of them. But that doesn't mean that it has a position of Rabbanus. The very word Rabbanus, what are Rabbanus? No, it's a Rabbanus. Rabbanus means authority, basically. We don't have to bandy the term about, look down upon it as authority. But there is a measure, in my opinion anyway, there's a measure of authority in the Rabbanim. Because the Rav, you know, is involved in a shul, and the shul has control of certain things, whether it be financial matters, or it be about Rabbanim's conscience matters, and the fact of emotions of Rabbanim after the problem. And there are all kinds of different things that a Rav has a should have. Some rabbis are whips, and in fact, they have no authority whatsoever. But that's not the way it should be. You can't promote a something based on what shouldn't be. And therefore, the rabbanim, to my mind, is a measure of authority. And for this reason, I think women are not qualified. As far as the knowledge is concerned, for the last week, I don't encourage this kind of Talmudic discourse, but a woman didn't know it, or she knew the halacha. After all, what does this mikha say? You know, shock. Because you know you're a day of chalagala. No, what it says. You know, that's also not true. All right, so if a woman comes and passes the same exam as given and in Hilchos Erevin, so she knows Hilchos Erevin, but she doesn't know Hilchos Erevin. I mean, as well as the as defined in the terms of this document, so she knows. Yes? Right.
They asked her, they came up
with the child. Right. I don't understand. Whatever her authority is, that her Shlev Zalman gave her to answer to that authority. I'm telling you that I get childless now, basically. I don't know about this lady, because I get childless. Said, in a positive, I'm not just in a very positive way, such and such. What do you say? Me against her. So I... Why not? I mean, I don't know if she is, but why not? Some requires a rabbonus, the pashkin son. As a matter of fact, either it's this or it's that. Why couldn't she? Yeah, but speak about the son. So the boss is sovereign, so it's fine to explain to you. This lady has a letter from Shlomo Zalman, and she has a right to lecture, not just pashkin for what? She's pashkin for 100 women who are then going to go teach another 100 each. That's what, 100 of the 100? 10,000 women she's passing for, right? So, I mean, what do you mean she's passing? True, she'll say, right, this is what I heard from Shlomo Zalman. This is what I heard from, but you know, what does the rabbi say? Wait, I mean, makes it up. He also heard from somebody. So, I haven't seen the letter, but apparently she has the brother. No. Well, depends on what smicha means. So, smicha means Rishus Lahara. So there are morahs. I don't understand. If the morah is teaching in a Beis Yaakov, she's not pasquining. Are you kidding? My daughters get stuck on all kinds of stuff that I agree with and disagree with from their morahs from Beis Yaakov. It's also psak. What are you talking about? They pasquin, you may do this, you may not do that. No? All the time. And it comes back to me. Well, what do you think? But this psak. Huh? And this and that? Huh? Flesik, milchik, you know, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Getting sacked all the time from there. Morris of Yomtiv, Shabbat. What do you mean today? Done all the time. Yeah? Well, as I explained to you last week, the idea of authority relates to the new thing, in my opinion. Yeah. This is Moment Magazine, the same one as last week. Now, it is a complaint that Orthodox women are left out of certain clubs that the rabbis belong to. No. If the rabbis were left out, with also maybe... Whatever. Now, female teachers of Texas Ritz is the only the Chama labor with. And now, there's so many people. She rattled off 10, 15 women who are teaching Torah Tech. smicha is a very different. What kind of smicha? The word smicha can mean, you know. I mean, I guess smicha. There's a discussion here about the idea of sorority. Okay? It's quoted over here. Some rabbis are concerned about sorority. Other contemporary Torah scholars raise the standards of honor of the community, which can broadly be interpreted as that which offends the faithful. I guess the lack of kavod hatzibur. Others are worried about the, you know, eidos, dayonos, mechitza, minyan, you know, all these kinds of things. Kalisha, yeah? Okay, so these are props to raise. So some of the three props that are being discussed over here. Sorora, kavod hatzibur, and, you know, it's authority. Or, you know, technical details. Wait, skip the page. Well, I gotta skip to one. Bye-bye. Okay. Witness, minion, mechitza, kalisha, these objections cannot be lightly dismissed. I agree. Okay. That means that if you are the Pope of Rome and whatever you say goes, and then no cardinals go against you, but it cannot be a minority view. You don't have a Pope, so the decentralization. So if Rabbi X decides he can ordain a woman, he can go out and do it, which he can. It is true that if Rabbi X would decide, let's say Rabbi X would decide to ordain women, whoever X may be, and the right of smicha for women, indicating whatever it indicates. He did it! You can't stop. No, wouldn't he put it in the chayim? I don't think he'd put it in the chayim. So, how do you get around the problems we mentioned before? Well, as far as Sarara is concerned, the authority, look, 1993, there are women who hold high office up until including presidency of Orthodox synagogue. So if you can be a president, perhaps not for a long time, a while, as the pulpit rabbi of traditional congregations. Nor do I believe it must be necessarily part of the agenda. Notice the word agenda. Though I know that some feminists would fault me for taking that stand. I like that. But a respect for community sensibilities and appreciation of its incremental steps, a desire for internal unity, and a realism of shul politics propel me along this path. To be sure, halachic issues of mechitza, of minyan, and aliyot, of female witnesses in Jewish courts of law, and of kol isha, will have to be looked at again. You know what I mean. You change, right? But meanwhile, an ordained Orthodox woman need not serve as a witness in the family status matter and need not breach the mechitza. All of this should not be joined to the issue at hand. The first step is the ordination of women. From there, we shall see where to go next. That's the end. I must say, the very honest article. And that's exactly what concerns it. The last sentence says it all. From there, we shall see where to go next. I mean, it's a big problem. So I must tell you that although some of the points in the article are well taken, the general thrust advocating that women should enter into smicha programs against all the nations, men do, I just have to reject complete. I wanted to read it to you so you get an idea what the issue is over here. Okay, yeah?
Even though people like talk about it,
does that mean that it's possible? I would venture to guess that this dude was not going to get into the smicha program. Now, I would guess that. Will a private Orthodox rabbi give a smicha to a woman? Could happen. What would happen next? Well, what happened next? That's a good question. No, I don't think so. I bet you realize these rabbis are not Orthodox already. Whoever would consider. It could happen. I don't know what happened next. I don't know. I don't know. Hanukkah? Oh, there's a letter about Hanukkah came in the mail. Came to your room, and I'll ask you a favor to follow what the letter says. Specifically, those women must fall as a request here. They lying in the muscle is in the lobby near the rear staircase. But the problem is that sometimes students go through the MCA building or to the front, and they never walk past that rear staircase.